3. Precisely at 6:10, Pyotr Stepanovich and Erkel were walking up and down the platform at the railway station beside a rather long train. Pyotr Stepanovich was setting off, and Erkel was saying goodbye to him. The luggage was in, and his bag was in the seat he had taken in a second-class carriage. The first bell had rung already. They were waiting for the second. Pyotr Stepanovich looked about him, openly watching the passengers as they got into the train. But he did not meet anyone he knew well. Only twice he nodded to acquaintances, a merchant whom he knew slightly, and then a young village priest who was going to his parish 2 stations away. Erkel evidently wanted to speak of something of importance in the last moments, though possibly he did not himself know exactly of what, but he could not bring himself to begin. He kept fancying that Pyotr Stepanovich seemed anxious to get rid of him and was impatient for the last bell. "You look at everyone so openly," he observed with some timidity, as though he would have warned him. "Why not? It would not do for me to conceal myself at present. It's too soon. Don't be uneasy. All I am afraid of is that the devil might send Liputin this way. He might send me out and race off here." "Pyotr Stepanovich, they are not to be trusted," Erkel brought out resolutely. "Liputin? None of them, Pyotr Stepanovich. Nonsense. They are all bound by what happened yesterday. There isn't one who would turn traitor. People won't go to certain destruction unless they've lost their reason. Pyotr Stepanovich, but they will lose their reason." Evidently the idea had already occurred to Pyotr Stepanovich, too, and so Erkel's observation irritated him the more. "You are not in a funk, too, are you, Erkel? I rely on you more than on any of them. I've seen now what each of them is worth. Tell them today all I've told you. I leave them in your charge. Go round to each of them this morning. Read them my written instructions tomorrow or the day after, when you are all together and they are capable of listening again. And believe me, they will be by tomorrow, for they'll be in an awful funk, and that will make them as soft as wax. The great thing is that you shouldn't be downhearted." "Ah, Pyotr Stepanovich, it would be better if you weren't going away." "But I am only going for a few days. I shall be back in no time." "Pyotr Stepanovich," Erkel brought out, warily but resolutely, "what if you were going to Petersburg? Of course, I understand that you are only doing what's necessary for the cause." "I expected as much from you, Erkel. If you have guessed that I am going to Petersburg, you can realize that I couldn't tell them yesterday at that moment that I was going so far for fear of frightening them. You saw for yourself what a state they were in. But you understand that I am going for the cause, for work of the first importance, for the common cause, and not to save my skin, as Liputin imagines." "Pyotr Stepanovich, what if you are going abroad? I should understand that you must be careful of yourself, because you are everything and we are nothing." "I shall understand, Pyotr Stepanovich." The poor boy's voice actually quivered. "Thank you, Erkel. You've touched my bad finger." Erkel had pressed his hand awkwardly. The bad finger was discreetly bound up in black silk. "But I tell you positively again that I am going to Petersburg, only to sniff round, and perhaps shall only be there for 24 hours and then back here again at once. When I come back I shall stay at Gaganov's country place for the sake of appearances. If there is any notion of danger, I should be the first to take the lead and share it. If I stay longer in Petersburg, I'll let you know at once, in the way we've arranged, and you will tell them." The second bell rang. "Ah, and there's only 5 minutes before the train starts. I don't want the group here to break up, you know. I am not afraid. Don't be anxious about me. I have plenty of such centres, and it's not much consequence. But there's no harm in having as many centres as possible. But I am quite at ease about you, though I am leaving you almost alone with those idiots. Don't be uneasy. They won't turn traitor. They won't have the pluck." "Ha-ha! You're going today, too?" he cried suddenly, in a quite different, cheerful voice to a very young man who came up gaily to greet him. "I didn't know you were going by the express, too. Where are you off to? Your mother's?" The mother of the young man was a very wealthy landowner in a neighbouring province, and the young man was a distant relation of Yulia Mikhailovna's, and had been staying about a fortnight in our town. "No, I am going farther, to R. I have 8 hours to live through in the train. Off to Petersburg," laughed the young man. "What makes you suppose I must be going to Petersburg?" said Pyotr Stepanovich, laughing even more openly. The young man shook his gloved finger at him. "Well, you've guessed right," Pyotr Stepanovich whispered to him mysteriously. "I am going with letters from Yulia Mikhailovna and have to call on 3 or 4 personages, as you can imagine. Bother them all, to speak candidly. It's a beastly job." "But why is she in such a panic? Tell me," the young man whispered too. "She wouldn't even see me yesterday. I don't think she has anything to fear for her husband. Quite the contrary. He fell down so creditably at the fire, ready to sacrifice his life, so to speak." "Well, there it is," laughed Pyotr Stepanovich. "You see, she is afraid that people may have written from here already, that is, some gentleman. The fact is, Stavrogin is at the bottom of it, or rather Prince K. Eh, it's a long story. I'll tell you something about it on the journey, if you like, as far as my chivalrous feelings will allow me, at least. This is my relation, Lieutenant Erkel, who lives down here." The young man, who had been stealthily glancing at Erkel, touched his hat. Erkel made a bow. "But I say, Verhovinsky, 8 hours in the train is an awful ordeal. Berestov, the colonel, an awfully funny fellow, is travelling with me in the first class. He is a neighbour of ours in the country, and his wife is a Garin, née de Garin. And you know, he is a very decent fellow. He's got ideas, too. He's only been here a couple of days. He's passionately fond of whist. Couldn't we get up a game, eh? I've already fixed on a 4th. Pripulov, our merchant from T, with a beard, a millionaire. I mean it, a real millionaire. You can take my word for it. I'll introduce you. He's a very interesting money bag. We shall have a laugh." "I shall be delighted. And I am awfully fond of cards in the train, but I am going 2nd class. "Nonsense, that's no matter. Get in with us. I'll tell them directly to move you to the 1st class. The chief guard would do anything I'd tell him. What have you got, a bag, a rug?" "First rate. Come along." Pyotr Stepanovich took his bag, his rug, and his book, and at once, and with alacrity, transferred himself to the 1st class. Erkel helped him. The 3rd bell rang. "Well, Erkel," hurriedly, and with a preoccupied air, Pyotr Stepanovich held out his hand from the window for the last time. "You see, I am sitting down to cards with them." "Why explain, Pyotr Stepanovich? I understand. I understand it all. Well, au revoir." Pyotr Stepanovich turned away suddenly on his name being called by the young man, who wanted to introduce him to his partners, and Erkel saw nothing more of Pyotr Stepanovich. He returned home very sad, not that he was alarmed at Pyotr Stepanovich's leaving them so suddenly, but he had turned away from him so quickly when that young swell had called to him, and he might have said something different to him, not au revoir, or at least have pressed his hand more warmly. That last was bitterest of all. Something else was beginning to gnaw in his poor little heart. Something which he could not understand himself yet. Something connected with the evening before.